This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from the all-new 2008 Cadillac CTS. Be an original. Visit Cadillac.gm.ca.
It's Monday, November 5th. The Quebec government has unveiled a plan to address the province's labor shortage by attracting 55,000 more immigrants over the next 3 years. Currently, the job openings the government is most desperate to fill include 8,000 French teachers and one captain of the Montreal Canadiens. This is The Current Podcast.
Hello, I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. You're listening to The Current. He is a member of what has been called Canada's first family of terror and the last citizen of a Western country still imprisoned in Guantanamo Bay. Omar Khadr is now 21 years old, but he rose to national prominence as a 15-year-old, fighting against the U.S. and its coalition troops in Afghanistan after 9/11. According to accounts from U.S. troops, he was hemmed inside a rural compound in July of 2002, and he fought alongside five other insurgents in a battle against 50 U.S. soldiers. When it was over, Omar Khadr was the only insurgent still breathing. On the U.S. side, Sergeant Christopher Spear was dead, and another soldier, Sergeant Lane Morris, was blind in one eye. Here is how Mr. Morris, now retired, recounted that day during a conversation on this program 2 years ago.
When the soldiers who went in to clear the compound and search for evidence got in there, Omar was actually survived, and he was hiding in the rubble. And when Christopher got close enough to him, he jumped up, threw the hand grenade, fired his pistol, and Chris didn't see the hand grenade, and it took him down. Omar was the only one that survived that firefight, and he was wounded severely and would have bled to death in just a few minutes. Christopher Spears was medical personnel, and Omar is fortunate that we had two medical personnel that day because he killed the first one. The second one saved his life.
Well, that was U.S. Sergeant Lane Morris speaking on The Current 2 years ago. He and Sergeant Spear's widow successfully sued the estate of Ahmed Saeed Khadr, Omar's father, for $102 million, but as yet no money has actually been paid. Omar Khadr was charged with murder for Sergeant Spear's death, but justice has been anything but swift. Mr. Khadr's five-year legal odyssey begins anew on Thursday when he is scheduled to be arraigned in Guantanamo Bay before a U.S. military commission. The charges against him were thrown out in June, but the Pentagon quickly reinstated them. If his trial begins as scheduled early next year, Omar Khadr will be the first detainee from Guantanamo Bay to face trial. Lieutenant Commander Bill Keebler is Omar Khadr's U.S. military-appointed lawyer. He'll be representing Omar Khadr at the hearing in Guantanamo Bay this week. We reached Lieutenant Commander Keebler in Washington. Good morning.
Good morning.
How is Omar Khadr doing as he nears his arraignment on Thursday?
Omar is, he's sort of day to day. I first met with Omar back in June, and we have been sort of working with him to deal with some of the psychological and physical issues that he was dealing with. And it's a difficult situation that he's in. Probably the worst part is not knowing what's going to happen, being in this sort of legal limbo. And so convincing him to engage with us and engage in the process is very difficult. But we're hopeful that he is going to continue to cooperate with counsel, and that we're going to be able to do the things that we've been doing on his behalf.
So you say convincing him to engage. Is he cooperating with you?
Yes, he has consented to my representation. He is working with me and has been working with me, as well as my American co-counsel and his Canadian foreign attorney consultants. The problem is that these guys know, and certainly Omar understands, that this is not a fair trial process. They understand that the government sort of reserves the right to detain them as enemy combatants, regardless of whether or not they are convicted by a military commission or other trial proceeding. And so it's difficult to convince someone under those circumstances to engage and to work with you. And so it's been a struggle. What we've tried to do is to convince Omar that there is hope, that people in Canada are starting to pay attention to this process. They're starting to get frustrated with the fact that a Canadian citizen is being subjected to a a trial process that no American citizen can be subjected to, and that there's a possibility, and again, we hope that it is going to happen, that Canada is going to follow the lead of Britain and other Western countries that have demanded the return of their nationals from Guantanamo Bay.
Mm, well, I want to ask about several of the things you just pointed out here, but first, what are the conditions like for him at Guantanamo?
Well, you know, he's been held at different places over the years. You know, one fact is that he has never been segregated from adults, and that, of course, violates, we believe, applicable international conventions on children in armed conflict. He has never been segregated. He's never been given age-appropriate treatment. And so that's one fact of his detention that has been present and remains. You know, as far as where he is physically, I mean, again, he's been in different places at different times. Most of the last year he has spent in what would be the equivalent of a solitary confinement type situation, where he's in a small cement cell for 23 hours a day and let out for about an hour's worth of exercise. So, I mean, I'll say that he's not there now, but, you know, that has certainly had a debilitating impact on him that causes us great difficulty. And again, dealing with those issues that I talked about earlier, which are getting him to engage and have some kind of meaningful hope that, you know, something good can happen.
Now, you have said this is not a fair trial process. Why not?
Well, the military commissions, put very simply, exist to allow the government to obtain criminal convictions using evidence that they could not use to obtain criminal convictions in any regular court in the United States or the civilized world. They were set up as sort of a companion piece to the interrogation regime that was established by the United States after 9/11 for gathering actionable intelligence using interrogation methods that did not meet, ordinary law enforcement standards and didn't meet standards under international law for the treatment of prisoners of war either. And so we created the status of unlawful enemy combatant so that we could subject people to this interrogation regime. And the result is a body of evidence that, you know, you can't use if you try them in a regular court. And so we have to create these military commissions to essentially allow the government to launder this evidence and convict people based on coerced and, in some cases, tortured evidence.
And have you seen all the evidence against him as his lawyer?
I've seen much of it. You know, one of the problems with this process, it's designed to take place, you know, outside public scrutiny and without any type of transparency. So I'm under fairly strict gag orders from the government not to discuss or disclose the substance of the documents that I've received in discovery. But I have seen most of the government's evidence against Omar, yes.
Now, he was 15 years old when he was captured. Has his case been handled any differently because he was what we would consider under any other circumstance a child soldier at the time?
Well, that's a very important point. Under any circumstance, and frankly, if he had any other name, any other last name than Cotter, he would have been treated as a child soldier, and that is certainly consistent with U.S. policy and practice in Afghanistan for other children, child soldiers detained in that armed conflict. And it's a noteworthy fact that the first U.S. soldier killed in Afghanistan was killed by a 14-year-old Afghani boy who was held by U.S. authorities for some period of time and then repatriated and released, sort of consistent with the general policy on child soldiers.
So there is a precedent. There is a precedent there.
Absolutely. And so I was going to contrast that with Omar's case. He has been treated like an adult from day one. And again, we think that violates not just you know, moral standards of decency, but certainly applicable international conventions on children in armed conflict.
Okay, and you say because his name is Cotter, what do you mean by that?
I mean, I think it's fairly evident to anyone that, you know, Omar's father is alleged to have been a senior al-Qaeda operative, someone who knew and worked closely with Osama bin Laden. I think U.S. authorities identified him early on as a potentially rich source of intelligence about his father and his father's connections and other members of his family. And I think for that purpose, he was treated differently from other children that were detained in Afghanistan and other folks and exploited for his intelligence value.
And have you made this point to the U.S. Officials, the ones you need to make that point to?
Well, I mean, that's certainly a point that I make to anyone who will listen. It's a point that I've made in my public talks in Canada, speaking about Omar's case, as we try to find some sort of explanation for why he has been subjected to this extraordinary process and why Canada has been indifferent to his plight.
Well, he is the only citizen of a Western ally still being held in Guantanamo. Britain got its citizens out, Australia. So what role should the Canadian government be playing in this case?
I think the Canadian government can legitimately at this point say that, you know, they've given their ally the benefit of the doubt with respect to Omar Khadr. 5+ years is enough, and they can follow the lead of other Western countries and say, look, this system does not meet minimum standards of fairness under international law. He has not been, or his age has not been appropriately taken into account by U.S. authorities, and this legal system does not take his age into account, and it's time for him to come home to Canada, and not just to necessarily go free, but to face due process under Canadian law, and if he has engaged in some sort of criminal offense, to receive a fair trial in a legitimate system.
Now, we did speak to the Department of Foreign Affairs, and a spokesperson gave us a statement that's just a few lines, and I'm going to quote it here. It says, Mr. Khadr faces serious charges, and any questions regarding whether Canada plans to ask for his release from Guantanamo are premature and speculative, as the legal process and appeals process are still ongoing. What do you think of that?
It's fascinating that here we are in November of 2007, and it's premature to talk about what role Canada might play on behalf of its citizen in Guantanamo Bay. It's fascinating, you know, when I hear the response of the Canadian government and they say we want to allow the process to work. Well, it's not a fair process. It's not designed to work to produce a just outcome. The trial process is designed to produce convictions. How do we know that? Because the government made it all up after, 5 years after the fact. They legislated the crimes. They developed the rules of evidence, the rules of procedure based on an existing group of cases in an effort to convict those known defendants. And then, we see the process at work recently where, the charges were dismissed in June. There was an appeal taken to the Special Military Appeals Court, and then the DOD rules give Omar a right to appeal to a civilian federal court in Washington. Well, now the government says, that rule that we published was invalid, so he doesn't really have a right to appeal. So even though we've filed an appeal with the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington based on their regulation, the trial is supposed to be moving forward in Guantanamo next week. So when I hear, let the process work, I wince.
I'm trying to understand, too. I'm listening to you. You are a lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy. Aren't you supposed to be in lockstep with the Pentagon and the White House on this one?
Well, I'm supposed to represent my client, and what I'm doing today and what I've been doing is trying to advocate for his right to receive a fair trial, and I hope that's not an extreme position even for a military lawyer to take on behalf of his client.
I want to ask about that because we have seen other U.S. Military lawyers raise issues about how the rule of law is being followed, how the U.S. is going forward on this. This is not a small thing.
Not at all. And what I'll say is that it's a process that, as a military lawyer, we have a robust and honorable tradition of military justice in this country, and to see the sort of the legitimacy that comes from that tradition really misused to provide some cloak of legitimacy for this illegitimate process is frustrating on a personal level. And I think that's why you see the military council engage in the process, speaking out maybe more forcefully than they otherwise would.
Now, how important is Omar Khadr's trial for the Bush administration?
Well, I guess I'd answer that question by saying, this process ostensibly exists for the worst of the worst. We're told that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Ramzi bin al-Shib and other senior al-Qaeda people responsible for such horrendous acts like 9/11 are detained in Guantanamo Bay. And, what's fascinating is that, the system that was designed for the worst of the worst hasn't been used thus far to prosecute the worst of the worst. It's been used for people like Omar Khadr, 15-year-old children, David Hicks, a low-level sort of adventurer from Australia who landed in Afghanistan. And so it's difficult to understand the administration's logic in proceeding with these cases when it claims to have these high-level folks in Guantanamo Bay that they can charge and that they can prosecute. And so with that said, it would be speculative on my part to sort of guess why they view the Khadr case as significant at all.
And he's likely to be the first detainee to go to trial, is he not, Omar Khadr?
Well, he is certainly the first one in the queue at this point. Mr. Hamdan was arraigned in June at the same time that the judge dismissed the charges in Omar's case. the judge in Mr. Hamdan's case dismissed his charges as well. Mr. Hamdan's case is scheduled for his next hearing in December, so we are, you know, of the three cases that are currently pending in the military commissions, we are in the lead.
Now, the fact that you are the military defense lawyer has also caused some concern in Canada, and I want to play you a clip. You're probably aware that the civilian Canadian lawyer for Omar Khadr is suspicious of your ability to help him, and Dennis Edney is a lawyer in Edmonton, and this is what he has to say. Take a listen.
I've been his Canadian lawyer for 5 years. I've appeared in the U.S. Supreme Court and every other court in the land, and Commander Kieber is a military-appointed lawyer. I agreed that we would work together with the military. I mean, working together and working with Mr. Kiebler, seems to have happened is that he has bypassed us, overstated his relationship with Mr. Khadr, and has now closed the door on us in Guantanamo Bay. Nothing is done. Mr. Kiebler has gone in his office, has gone on this media blitz, thinking that they could do with Canada what happened with Hicks in Australia. And I've told Mr. Kieber, that Canada has a different approach to Canada than what the Australians did. And that is, the Canadians have a very difficult time separating the Khadr family. In one of the most important trials coming up since the Nuremberg trials, we have a military office that has appointed Mr. Kieber, who has no experience, no trial experience, no experience in criminal or terrorist law, whose background is solely in taxation law. That was his job in the military. Think about that. I see the whole process as a sham.
Well, that is harsh criticism coming from Dennis Edney, the civilian lawyer for Omar Khadr in Edmonton. And so, Lieutenant Commander Bill Kiebler, I'd like you to speak to some of that. First of all, he claims you have no experience. Can you speak to that?
Well, I wish I knew something about tax law, because I could probably make a lot more money than I am now in the Navy. Let me just say generally, the military commission rules and the Military Commissions Act have certain requirements for counsel and civilian defense counsel. Unfortunately, one of the restrictions that exists under the law as it's written is a limitation on foreign counsel. And so Mr. Edney and his colleague in Canada, who have represented Omar admirably for a number of years in litigation in Canada, are unable to serve as counsel in the military commission process. What they serve as under the rules are what we call foreign attorney consultants. And so they essentially sort of work as part of the defense team under the supervision of the U.S. lawyer to assist in, client relations and other things that a consultant might be useful for in the process. And they have served in that capacity and have been invaluable members of the defense team thus far. They played a critical role in helping Omar or convincing Omar to accept my representation, and so I'm very, very grateful. And I hope that they will continue to play that role as consultants going forward. Obviously there are some disagreements, but I would invite people to not pay too much attention to the squabbles between lawyers, because you could do nothing else if you get in that habit. The important thing is that people need to stay focused on Omar, and we all need to keep in mind his interests and his rights, and I think Mr. Edney, Mr. Whitling, myself, and everybody involved in this process on this side are ultimately battling for the same thing, and that is to get Omar out of this unjust process in Guantanamo Bay and back to Canada.
So is Mr. Edney even able to be at the arraignment?
Mr. Edney will not be attending next week's hearing.
Okay. And is appearing for the defense before such a tribunal new to you?
I think appearing for the defense before a military commission is new to just about everybody.
Because the commissions are new.
We've never done one of these. With that said, this is my second military commissions case. I've been involved with the commissions for a couple of years now and have been a court-martial litigator in the military for I guess, going on about 8 years. But again, I don't want to get into the substance or the specifics of Mr. Edney's comments. I think people just need to, you know, not get wrapped around the axle on the council issues and stay focused on what's important, and that's Omar Khadr.
He also mentioned David Hicks, who, of course, is the Australian, who the Australian government successfully managed to bring him home for trial. There was more of a public debate, pro and con, that doesn't seem to be happening in Canada.
Well, I think it's starting to happen. I think, you know, we're starting to see the same initial signs that occurred in Australia much earlier in the Hicks case, and we're starting to see those things in Canada. You know, very significantly, I think the Canadian Bar Association coming out in August and calling on the Prime Minister to negotiate for Omar's release from Guantanamo really opened up a broad middle for politicians and other groups to sort of take a similar position. And now you've seen Mr. Dion, the leader of the Liberal Party, come out publicly and say that the government needs to see that Omar is released and that his basic human rights are respected. I think all three opposition parties are essentially on the same page as far as that's concerned. And so I'm hopeful that as people learn more about this process, they learn more about military commissions and what's going on in Guantanamo Bay, that public dialogue that you referred to will increase.
And once this arraignment begins on Thursday, what's the timetable? What are you looking at? Do you know, in terms of how long this process will last?
Well, that's a great question. You know, the government's had about 3.5 years to put together its case. It's interviewed dozens of people. It's got dozens of witnesses, you know, mountains of documents and classified documents. And their proposed trial schedule is for us to be ready to go at the end of January. So I'm hopeful that the military judge will extend some degree of fairness to the defense in terms of our ability to do an adequate investigation and to prepare on Omar's behalf. Again, I'm not ultimately confident in the result that we're going to receive in front of a military commission for all the reasons that I've discussed.
Is there any chance he could be acquitted?
I wouldn't bet any money on it.
So what you seem to be saying, and from picking up on what you said much earlier then, even if regardless, he could be detained after this goes forward, if he's...
That's absolutely right. I mean, you know, there is no legal impediment to his going right, you know, to Omar going right back to his cell.
Even if he's found not guilty?
That's correct.
And this is part of your problem with the system?
Well, it's not so much my problem with the system. I mean, it's a problem with the system.
But is this just for show, then?
You use the word, not me. Yes, it is for show. It's a demonstration. You know, again, I mean, I think with some of these low-level cases like Omar's cases and the prosecution folks have been fairly candid about it, it's to validate the process to see if it can work. And, you know, obviously it's not. So, you know, at some point I would imagine they hope that they can get to a point where they can have some of these trials and then they can bring in, you know, the Khalid Sheikh Mohammeds and the Ramzi bin al-Shaibs. And, you know, really, it's not a legal process. It's a political process. The point of it is not to so much prove that such and such a person violated a law. It's to show that it's a really bad person and that these bad things that we've been doing are morally justified. And so, yes, I mean, when you sort of understand that as the backdrop, the ends justify the means, it really is a show trial.
You're almost suggesting as well that it's a bit of a test run. If it works, then they'll try it on the big guns.
I think that's a fair statement. You know, the practical effect of that is, or the practical result of that is, that a Canadian citizen is being used as a guinea pig for this, you know, affront to the rule of law and violation of basic human rights.
I guess we should stay in touch with you.
Please do.
Okay. Lieutenant Commander Keebler, thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
U.S. Lieutenant Commander Bill Keebler is Omar Khadr's U.S. military-appointed lawyer. He spoke to us from Washington. Well, that's all we have for this podcast. You can listen to The Current weekday mornings on CBC Radio 1 right after the 8:30 news, as well as on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. To find out more about our program, visit cbc.ca/thecurrent. If you have any thoughts on what you're hearing on The Current, share them with us. Send us your comments. You can email us at thecurrent, all one word, thecurrent@cbc.ca. Our mailing address is Post Office Box 500, Station A, Toronto, M5W1E6. Or call us collect 1-877-287-7366. To subscribe to other great CBC Radio podcasts, check out cbc.ca/podcasting. Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC Radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.